Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Saturday. We are headed vaultward. What's in the vault today?
Well, this time the vault is full of sex bots, Joe.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so this is an episode that I recorded with Christian back in 2017, March 30th, 2017. And this one was a really interesting one to do. This is one that we've actually run into cases where someone has suggested it, and then we get to point back and say, ah, actually, here it is. Here's everything you probably want to know and a few things you don't want to know about the idea of robots that are being created, that are being conceived, and maybe created in the future that are created for human sexual reasons.
Huh.
And it runs the gamut from ideas that are rather exploitive and kind of disturbing to things that actually sound like they will have a positive effect on society. The idea of therapeutic robots.
Hmm.
So anyway, we present it to you. Let you dive in, and then you can let us know how you feel about these ideas.
All right. Well, without any further ado, let's get into this vault episode.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Christian Sager. So, hey, if this is an episode that you are listening to maybe with your kids, or maybe you're concerned about the company that you're listening to it in, we should just let you know up front, this is going to be a little bit of a more graphic episode of Stuff to Blow Your Mind. Based on the title, you probably know that already. But we just wanted to give you a heads up because we know that a lot of families write into us and say, hey, I really like listening to the show. I listen to it on the way to school in the morning with my daughter. This might not be the episode to do that.
Yeah, you might give this one a skip in that case. Now, that being said, we are going to tackle the topic of sex bots in this episode. And we are, as usual, we're going to do our best to demystify the topic a bit. We're going to explore, yes, we're going to talk about some of the, in many cases, trashier examples of this that show up in our science fiction.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about some definite opposition to the idea of sex bots, but we're also going to explore some territory that I was really fascinated with, that where we see a more positive vision of what a sex bot or sexual interaction between humans and machines might consist of. Visions of this that are beneficial, even therapeutic.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the real hook here. And the thing that I didn't know a lot about going into the research, which is that there are a lot of these robots being built, and there's a lot of research going into their construction that's healing, basically, for human beings in a variety of ways. And we'll get into that.
Now, before we get into the science, we should just take a few moments to talk about some of the examples that we've seen. And there are many different examples of sex bots in science fiction. I mean, whenever we start thinking about artificial humans, and certainly we've dreamed about artificial humans since ancient times. They factor into many of our myth cycles.
Yeah.
We inherently deal with our anxiety about technology and our anxiety about human nature in dreaming up these various examples. So a few that come to mind, there's a wonderful novel titled The Wind-Up Girl, and this was by Paolo Bacigalupi. And this one concerned your typical sex bot scenario where you have a pleasure bot of some kind, a feminine robot that is made for male pleasure that escapes, goes rogue, you know, has a struggle for independence.
Okay.
It's a really good book, but it does explore kind of a classic trope here.
That is a very common trope in sci-fi now. Mm-hmm. Now that I think about it, and especially looking at a lot of our examples here with things that are really kind of popular right now, like Humans or Westworld, right? Mm-hmm. Like these are shows that are all exploring that same idea.
Yeah, both great shows. And you can it's obvious why this is such a powerful trope, because you get to explore not only our concerns about technology and the future of technology, but also about what it means to be female in today's world and various feminine issues that you can explore through this fantastic vision.
Yeah. The other recent one that really gripped a lot of people's attention, I thought it was maybe the best movie that came out that year, was Ex Machina.
Yes.
Alex Garland's Ex Machina. Wow. Definitely talked about the issues surrounding sex bots, but was more about, I guess, the like emotional availability of AI.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that like we've actually off air been kind of talking about, like how it relates to this topic is, for instance, that Spike Jonze movie, Her.
Oh, yeah.
Which I haven't seen, but I don't think actually features a robot in it. But it's sort of the same idea. It's like, can an artificial intelligence convince you that it's real enough that you're an emotionally engaging relationship with it?
Yeah, this is a whole topic unto itself. Like, to what degree we imbue a non-living thing with life, even if it's not a robot, even if it is a doll or a toy, a painting. I mean, we have this fabulous ability to anthropomorphize just about anything.
Yeah.
To have at least you put a smiley face on something and we will instantly have this smidgen, at least a smidgen of investment in that thing as a person.
Well, and that goes way back. You've got notes here to the Greek myth of Hephaestus, right? Or as I usually call him, Vulcan, because I think that's Vulcan's what, the Roman version of that?
Yeah, Vulcan's the Roman version. And and if you've ever rolled through Birmingham, Alabama, they have a big statue of Vulcan.
Wait, is that right?
That's true.
Why?
Because it was like a steelworking town.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So, so Vulcan plays a role in my personal history as well. But yeah, this in myth, he created a series of life-size golden maids, among various other marvels. So he was kind of a mad scientist of Greek and Roman myth.
But you can see there, like going that far back, that we human beings were thinking about in our culture and our storytelling, like how we were going to try to replicate the human experience in machines, or in – I believe the terminology that was used referring to Vulcan and Hephaestus was biotechny.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And there's a wonderful Ian Magazine article on that. I'll try to include a link to that and some of the other articles that we're mentioning here in the landing page for this episode at stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Also, obviously, many people out there are probably thinking of Daryl Hannah's character Pris from Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
Which is referred to as a basic pleasure model. Although, so it's funny, I was reading an IO9 article yesterday that's all about what we're talking about right now, the fictionalized versions of sex bots.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of argumentation in the commentary about whether Pris counted because replicants are technically organic individuals. I think she counts.
Yeah. There's that whole – once you get into the whole android replicant thing, it gets a little hazy. Now, if anybody out there is a fan of Rick and Morty, there was an episode titled "Raising Gazorpazorp" that included a sex bot that
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, that Morty ends up acquiring and has a brief addiction to.
Okay,
so we might come back to that vision of a sex bot here in the future. But that kind of leads us into some of the more exploitive visions, I guess you can say, sort of heavy metal visions of the sex bot.
What was the name of the artist that you sent me yesterday? There's this guy. So Heavy Metal Magazine is what we're referring to, which is, if you're unfamiliar with it, it is an American magazine that specializes in comics that are sort of like R-rated fantasy sci-fi comics. And the cover art is usually pretty salacious. And Robert found this one artist who's done quite a number of covers for them that specializes in sexualized female robots.
Oh, yeah. This would, be Japanese artist Hajime Soriyama.
Okay, yeah.
And this was one of the – I remember when I first got online, really the first year of college, last year of high school, I ended up introducing myself to a number of fantasy artists that I was instantly taken with. And I remember encountering this guy's work, and it's eye-catching, but it's all of, like, sexy robot pinup dolls. Like, that's his thing. And that's certainly a vision of the sex bot, the fembot, the, you know, whatever you want to call them, whatever they're called in your particular sci-fi property that we see time and time again. Like a property that I think back to is 1987's Cherry 2000, starring Melanie Griffith.
I have never seen that, and I've always kind of heard about it on the fringe of things, but yeah, it really hit my radar doing the research for this episode.
Yeah, it's definitely one that falls more into the, you know, exactly what you'd expect from a 1980s film. So that has a sex bot in it.
I suppose, like, she can't complain too much about her daughter doing these 50 Shades of Grey movies. Then, if like her daughter can just be like, "Well, you were in Cherry 2000."
Yes, but she was not Cherry 2000.
Oh, she wasn't?
Yeah, she was just she's like a human bounty hunter.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. All right. You know what is not on the list that it just like popped in my head? I can't believe we forgot about this. The Stepford Wives.
Yeah, the Stepford Wives is a big one. And it ties in directly with some of the fears and anxieties that we're going to discuss here, because it's men making robot women to be their perfect wives.
Yeah, yeah. There's Jude Law as Gigolo Joe in the movie AI, one of the rare examples of a male sex bot in popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
On Buffy the Vampire Slayer, they made several sex bots, including one of Buffy for Spike, which really – there's some really dicey sexual relationship stuff that goes on in that show towards the end, the later seasons, and that's one of them. And then the comics – there's this comic called Autumnlands that's coming out right now that I really enjoy. It's by Kurt Busiek and Benjamin Dewey. And in the second arc, the characters encounter these statuesque naked robot women who once served this like long forgotten civilization as sex slaves. And when one of the characters tries to force himself upon them, they rebel. And it's a really interesting take on this whole thing that we're going to be talking about today. But I highly recommend it if you're into comics. Check that out.
So obviously some of these visions of the sex bot are more fantastic than others, and some are more serious than others in their commentary. But ultimately it's all sort of circling around our legitimate concerns about ourselves and technology. So what are we afraid of? What indeed are we very right to be concerned about? You know, we see this continuing trope of the human abuse of robots mirroring our own abuse of each other. If we create robots in our image, then are we destined to exploit them, to abuse them, and even further objectify and dehumanize each other based on this model?
Yeah.
And I also can't help but feel that female sex bots in fiction especially tend to serve as commentaries on product femininity, the all-too, you know, frequent portrayal of human females as mere sex objects devoid of nuanced personality or identity.
And we didn't plan it out this way, but actually – so coming out this week along with this episode, we're doing an episode on the science of ovulation and how that plays into marketing femininity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to do these two episodes side by side and sort of see the parallels.
Yeah, there's always this weird synchronicity between episodes, it seems.
So why don't we get into the current state of, you know, what some of you out there are probably like, well, wait, what, like, There's all these pop culture versions that you just mentioned, but where are these sex bots you speak of now, right?
Right.
I would just first like to very quickly go over a short history of sex toys in terms of, you know, where we're at with that. These are tens of thousands of years old. You know, most people don't know that. They probably think it's a relatively recent invention. The oldest dildo is more than 20,000 years old. And vibrators began as medical devices that midwives and physicians used to treat illnesses such as hysteria through what they referred to as pelvic massage or manual stimulation. The first one of these was introduced in 1734. That goes far back. And it wasn't until the late 1800s when powered vibrators were available to doctors. And then by 1920, they were available directly to consumers. And then, you know, nowadays people think about computer-driven sex toys. That goes back to the mid-1970s.
Yes. I mean, certainly sexuality is always a huge aspect of human behavior, even if we want to push it to the background.
Yeah.
So it has a tendency to be at the forefront of any technological advancement or any kind of new enterprise.
I think it's just, yeah, worth like reminding ourselves like, hey, this isn't new. This has been around for a long time. What we're discussing here is really just like the latest iteration of this. And what does that say about us?
Yeah. And it's not a situation where suddenly sexually minded individuals are at the forefront, pushing and meddling with the technology. They've always been there. Just to give a brief idea of the future so that we can backtrack and discuss the present, there was an interesting Pew Research Center paper that came out in 2014 titled Digital Life in 2025, AI, Robotics, and the Future of Jobs. Now, for the most part, this article did not go into the use of sexual robots.
Okay.
But there is one part where this guy by the name of Stowe Boyd, who's lead researcher for GigaOM Research, a futurist, he predicted, quote, pizzas will not be delivered by teenagers hoping for a tip. Food will be raised by robotic vehicles, even in small plot urban farms that will become the norm since so many people will have lost their jobs to bots. Your x-rays will be reviewed by a battery of Watson-grade AIs, and humans will only be pulled in when the machines disagree. Robotic sex partners will be commonplace, although the source of scorn and division, the way that critics today bemoan selfies as an indicator of all that's wrong with the world.
So I think that's an interesting take on it. I definitely agree with him that on the scorn and division, and that is going to be a, you know, really the big divide that we're going to speak about today in terms of what's going on with this technology. I don't see it as being analogous to selfies, though. I think it's a little more extreme than that.
Yeah. Well, I think time and time again we have to come back to examples of what the current technology is. So today we have a number of different sexual devices, sex toys, if you will, that are on the market, and many of them are very high selling. That being said, sex toys continue and perhaps will always be the punchline of many a joke.
Yeah, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking about this earlier that it's like, you know, this is the stuff of like late night talk show hosts like making a throwaway joke here or there. It's something everybody can kind of relate to and laugh at themselves about, right?
And then at the same time, many of the people who are laughing and some that are not laughing are still going to perhaps go online and order one of these devices for their personal use.
Yeah.
So we're a far cry, though, from having a robotic humanoid body that moves like we do. But roboticists continue to make strides in this area. So everyone's seen videos of the various Boston Dynamics robots, you know. And they're often kind of fearsome. They look like mechanical jumping horses.
Yeah,
and whatnot.
So we should probably clarify what this is. Maybe not everybody out there is familiar with this. So this is what, the last year and a half, Boston Dynamics is like continually releasing these kind of like press release videos of these robots that they're working on that basically look like robot pack mules.
Yeah, and that's kind of the sell, right? That they're robotic pack mules that would have a military application that can go over diverse terrain.
Yeah.
So we can look to those, and obviously these are not sexy. These are not these are not devices where you say, hey, that's the future of sexual robotics right there. But they do demonstrate the strides that we're making in creating robots that can move in reality, that can actually interact with the world physically. And, you know, there are other areas where the technology continues to impress. So, we robot-assisted surgery, VR, haptic feedback. And there is this this field of that's sometimes referred to as teledildonics, where they're utilizing all this technology for more advanced sexual devices and sex toys.
Yeah, this is basically across long distances, right?
Right. Like one example of this is Frixon, I believe is the name, how you pronounce the product. And they use haptic sensors and robotic accessories to enable remote control sex.
Okay, so let's take a quick break, and when we get back, now that we've covered sort of, you know, up to the current state of affairs with sex bots, we're going to talk about the off-the-shelf, on-the-market robot, Roxy.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, we're back. So, yeah, let's talk about Roxy a little bit. Roxy is, I think, it's an important example to hit, but it's also such a problematic example to hit,
yeah,
because it represents some of the more notorious aspects of sexual robots.
So we learned about Roxy from Eon Magazine, which if you're a long-time listener, you know that we read quite a bit of it. It's a robot companion. It doesn't quite produce the uncanny valley effect, unlike those Actroids that you sometimes see that are created in like Japanese commercials or something like that. But Roxy comes in a variety of models, and some of them actually have personalities. So there's a little bit of programming that goes into this. It includes the regular Roxy. There is also mature Martha, young Yoko, and frigid Farah. And that's where I got a little I got a little creeped out personally, because the idea of frigid Farah is it's like she plays hard to get. She's, you know, not necessarily interested in having sex with you. And that's a little – that's where there's some weird lines, I think.
Yeah, this is a, you know, an obvious example of something we'll come back to, the idea that you have men creating – female robots for a male audience.
And they've got very specific fetishes.
Yeah, very stereotypical portrayals,
yeah.
And sort of male-approved models of what a female is. Very simplistic models.
Yeah. Oh, and I should clarify, too, young Yoko is not – although we are going to talk about pedophile sex bots, young Yoko is supposed to be over the age of 18 personality-wise. Okay. But basically, this Roxy robot sounds kind of like Siri in the way that it talks back to you. Their purpose is to provide more than sex. The idea is that they're your true companion and you can talk to them before and after sex. And given that you've got all the personalities chosen here, you know, what does this tell us about the future proliferation of these sex bots? And here's where it gets real weird. Aeon says that the person who created Roxy, it was originally created as the recreation of a friend that was lost in 9/11. And then that developed into this consumer-oriented sex bot.
Well, and then I've also read that the technology behind Roxy started out as an inquiry into the creation of a robot home care nurse.
Okay.
So
now I'm wondering if there's just like these different urban myths about Roxy.
Well, no, I wrote a little bit years ago where I ended up touching on Roxy, and I believe the home care nurse thing is legit.
Okay.
But I guess it comes down to like the evolution of an idea, the evolution of figuring out how to commercially apply your technology.
Yeah.
So what starts as an intention to create a robotic nurse may end up going through some changes until suddenly you're producing a sex doll.
Well, like you said, with all technological developments, that kind of the pioneering end of it is sexual in nature. I mean, look at the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we mentioned sex dolls. Of course, sex dolls have been around for some time. And it's been proven that individuals can at least find some sort of detached pleasure, even an imaginative bond with even just a non-robotic semblance of a human. I always think back to a wonderful BBC documentary titled Guys and Dolls that came out. God, it must have been – I think it may be 10 years old now.
Okay.
You can find – I think you can find most of it on YouTube and other such websites. But they profiled a handful of real doll owners. These are, of course, anatomically correct, life-size human replicants.
So are they built for the purpose of sex?
Or yes.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah,
they are built with that purpose exclusively in mind. But as this documentary explored – the individuals and their bond with these things ranged immensely. So there's one guy in it that's hanging them up on hooks, and another that just seems to obsessively collect them and has them stacked like kindling in his crawl space. Huh. And those are some examples that, you know, maybe hit the creep level for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But then there's this one guy who seems to have a largely, if not exclusively, emotional relationship with his doll. And he's going through like separation anxiety over having to move, and he's having to ship it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it does a good job of just showing you, all right, yeah, you can have something like a real doll, but then the varying levels of engagement with it, the way people anthropomorphize it, is going to vary from person to person.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess like if you want to step back at it and look at it like a very simple sense here, and pardon me if this is a little vulgar, mm-hmm. but it sounds like we're somewhere between that movie Her I referred to earlier, where like no body is needed. It's just an emotional relationship with an artificial consciousness and like a fleshlight, right?
Yeah. A fleshlight, just to explain, because this will come up again, is a popular sex toy with a male market.
Yeah, exactly. So – and that's kind of where we're going to find criticism on both sides about this, is like – arguments about why we shouldn't make sex bots and arguments about why we should, because there's this broad spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, have you seen the movie Dead Girl before?
I have not. I'm familiar with it. I think it was one that would always show up on Netflix for me.
Yeah, I saw it on Netflix. It's not about sex bots, but it's related to this. I don't want to give too much away, but essentially these guys find a woman's dead body, but the body doesn't rot at all. Like, she's inanimate, but she's not dead.
So it's a zombie film.
Kind of, yeah. Okay. And it goes where you would expect it to go based on what we're talking about.
All right.
Anyways, it seemed related to this.
All right. Well, on that note, let's get into the case against sex bots. I feel like this is a good place to start because it's going to tie in more directly with some of those sci-fi ideas that we explored already. So you have one individual in particular that's worth mentioning here, and that's Dr. Kathleen Richardson. She's a robot ethicist at De Montfort University in Leicester, and she heads the Campaign Against Sex Robots, or CASR. And she makes a number of arguments. She kind of basically has a manifesto.
Yeah, and so look, we should clarify, like this appeared to me to start off as a long academic paper, mm-hmm. which is, you know, well written. But now it's like it's this whole web presence with sort of action items to it. And she calls basically for an organized approach against the development of sex robots as a necessary response for humanity. And she says the reason why is that sex robots in her mind reflect human principles of dignity, mutuality, and freedom. And that by creating these bots, it's a representation of violence, discrimination, and coercion. So we are manifesting kind of like the worst parts of ourselves in making these sex bots.
And she also argues that the development of sex bots further sexually objectifies women and children.
She says the vision for sex bots is underscored by reference to the prostitute John exchange, which relies on recognizing only the needs and wants of the buyers of sex, while the sellers of sex are not attributed subjectively and they're reduced to, you know, a thing, an object like a robot.
She argues that the development of sex robots and the ideas to support their production show the immense horrors still present in the world of prostitution, which is built on the perceived inferiority of women and children and therefore justifies their use as sex objects.
Also, that the development of sex robots will further reduce human empathy, and that can only be developed by an experience of a mutual relationship.
And that one ties in nicely to you and Joe's recent episodes on animal empathy and the human
implications. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
She goes on to challenge the view that the development of adult and child sex robots will have a positive benefit to society, but instead further reinforce power relations of inequality and violence. We'll get into what she's arguing about in a little bit.
Yeah, and then finally, she says, you know, they take issue with arguments that propose that sex robots could help reduce sexual exploitation and violence toward prostituted persons. This is pointing to all the evidence that shows how technology and the sex trade coexist and reinforce each other, creating more demand subsequently for human bodies. And we're going to talk about that a little bit too, especially in the case of pedophilia.
Now, Dr. Kate Devlin, who's a researcher at Goldsmith University of London, their Department of Computing, she took some issue with this in a September 2016 interview with The Guardian. So she countered that this argument as a whole dismisses the fact that women, not men, are, quote, more likely to purchase artificial non-human substitutes such as vibrators.
Yeah. She also says that the Campaign Against Sex Robots, this is to distinguish, this is Kate Devlin talking against Kathleen Richardson.
Yes.
She says that it rests on a parallel that's drawn between sex robots and female sex workers. And Devlin sees sex robots as being potentially useful, especially if they're using machine learning and biofeedback, in the sense that they can, quote, provide adaptive, personal, fulfilling sexual experiences. And in that way, they could be used for therapeutic reasons. She also says sex is part of humanity's mental processes, and mm-hmm. it's fundamental to our human condition. So it's worth considering how our bodily interactions like this make changes to our brain and how that has bearing on our cognitive processes. So there's a lot here that she's arguing that says like, yeah, like I understand your argument, Kathleen Richardson, about, a campaign against sex robots, but there's some potential benefits here too that you seem to be ignoring.
Yeah. I think she makes a strong counter argument here, you know, saying, hey, would a woman be disinterested in buying a human replica or just a robotic sexual stimulation system? Because the market information would tend to say no, that women already buy sexual technology. So why not the next iteration of sexual technology?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, indeed, there is this problem that technology in general is often made by men for men. And we can see examples of this well beyond the scope of sexual devices.
Totally, yeah.
The artificial heart, for example, its sizing has long best fit the dimensions of an adult human male's chest. It wasn't until later that companies like Syncardia eventually rolled out a size more suitable for adult females and children.
Another thing worth noting here too is that newer forms of sex toys are created specifically for sharing between couples. So it's not necessarily male-oriented, but here's the thing. They're either marketed to couples or to men, not directly to women, even though, as Devlin says, women are the ones primarily using sex toys. Mm-hmm. So sex technology is definitely being created from a dominant heterosexual male perspective here. And even if sex bots aren't conscious, they're externally made to look like people, right? Mm-hmm. Specifically, women who are owned by heterosexual men. So maybe if we thought broader about our sex bots, we could alleviate these long-running human problems. The same way I like to think of it looking back to the vibrator and how it basically changed completely like the way that medicine was approaching things like hysteria.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to the fact that you can go out to buy a sex toy. And you can get something, yes, that definitely looks like a replica of a human body part. But you can also get things that can easily be mistaken for other household gadgets.
Oh, yeah, totally.
For instance, I travel with an AeroPress, which is a coffee-making device.
Okay.
But it is a cylindrical gadget.
It's like a French press that like is compartmentalized?
Yeah, it's basically like a plastic cylinder with a plunger that goes in it and press the coffee out the other side. And I travel with it because it's a great way to ensure good coffee on the go.
Sure.
But it inevitably looks like it could be some sort of sexual device.
Yeah, when it's getting scanned through TSA.
Yeah.
Yeah, our dogs have these toys called Go Nuts. The company is called Go Nuts.
Okay.
And they make these like really sturdy, rubbery dog chew toys because I've got two pit bull mixes. So mm-hmm. they just like destroy anything I give them. And one of them is like a long shaft like looking thing. And the other one looks like a donut.
Okay.
And the day that they got sent to my wife's office, you know, she works for a big company. Security screens all the mail that goes through. And she was just laughing. She was like, can you imagine what the security people downstairs think as this stuff is going through their x-ray machine?
The good news here, though, is that this all means plausible deniability for any actual sex device,
right,
that has some degree of design ambiguity about it. Now, in 2010, there was a Dutch paper that came out, and this was written for the United Nations, and it was titled Gender Dimensions of Product Design, and that it highlighted a, quote, male gender bias in many tech products, and as well as just a disconnect from the view of gender as a spectrum, that observationally, all of this is influenced by biology, culture, and situation. So I guess the idea here is that even if you get beyond the fact that it's largely men designing technology for men or men designing technology for women, there's also not necessarily that nuanced an idea of what constitutes gender in human reality.
Yeah.
And, male thinking has dominated the development of TVs and GPS devices. So can we really expect anything better from physical and conceptual design for sexual robotic systems?
And then we've got David Levy here. And he, I'm going to let you introduce this, but man, he wrote this really fascinating piece. It seems like he's written multiple pieces specifically about ethics and robots.
Yeah, this guy, this would be a good place if you want to do a deeper dive into some of these topics. But he's a British author, chess master, and CEO of Intelligent Toys Limited. And he wrote about much of these issues in The Ethics of Robot Prostitutes from his that's featured in the book Robot Ethics, published in 2011. And he argued that sex bots only really become a problem when they're bestowed with artificial consciousness, thus elevating them from mere artifact to something more, something at least mimicking personhood.
Yeah. So the gist here of Levy's argument is that as long as sex bots are artifacts without any artificial consciousness, there's no ethical implications in having sex with them or using them for prostitution. Now, if we go back, I would imagine Dr. Kathleen Richardson would take umbrage with that. But he says, you know, as long as there's no artificial consciousness, we're okay. But if they do have a consciousness, then that's when we get into legal and ethical implications. And not just for ourselves, but then we've got to think about the robots. Do they get rights? Do they have legal and ethical rights that are implied by their consciousness?
Yeah, this is a whole can of worms here because on one hand, it gets into the whole question of what is consciousness? We can't even define what it is for humans. How do we define it in robots? And then it makes you ask questions about any and everything where there's a potential like faking of consciousness. Yeah. Like when do I have to start becoming concerned about NPC characters in video games, virtual individuals? Like if you have an NPC in a video game that like has a very realistic portrayal to your violence and your, you know, running around gun-toting, whatever the behavior is in the video game.
Sure, yeah.
Like at what point does it become kind of creepy?
That's essentially, I think, the argument that Westworld tries to make in its first season, right?
Yeah, like insert Westworld as potential commentary on that question. One more thought on this. I was reading an article in Ian Magazine, and this is Sex Bot Slaves. Sociologist Lee Reich has this excellent quote. But even if sex bots are not currently conscious, they do have the external markings of personhood, and we are programming them to be person-like. Indeed, we are programming them to be like a specific type of person, the type of woman who can be owned by a heterosexual man.
So now we've heard many of the arguments against sex bots, and we've set up kind of where we're at with the technology. Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to come back in on this, and we're going to talk about the argument for sex bots and how they could be beneficial to humanity.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. So in this next little bit, we're going to talk about the victimization reduction argument for sex bots. And just a quick warning, we're going to briefly discuss pedophilia here. So if you really don't want to hear that, you know, skip ahead a little bit on your device. We're going to discuss it with decorum here, but it does play a role in this discussion. So a point of contention, as referenced already, is the argument that a robotic sex bot would absorb the violence and abuse that a human would otherwise suffer. And this would apply to both – well, really to all individuals, male, female, or a child. Or I've also seen the argument for animals as well.
Right.
So if you could have a robot stand in and absorb that abuse, like better a robot than an actual human.
Right.
Like that – that's a problematic argument.
Yeah, but that is an argument that some people make.
Right. I don't think there are many people out there who would argue with the statement that if a robot could suffer something rather than a human, that would be preferable.
Well, depending on whether or not it has consciousness.
Yeah. Well, then we get into that whole can of worms. But there's it's a problematic argument, but it's one worth discussing, especially as it relates to people with pedophilic impulses. There's a great deal of work that has gone into this topic over the years, and we could easily do a whole episode on it, though it would be a rather downer of an episode. There's no known medical or psychiatric cure for pedophilia, and our methods of dealing with such individuals is often crude. But we do have men such as Shin Takagi, who's a Japanese man profiled in the Atlantic in 2016. And this is a guy who struggles with an attraction to children, as well as the knowledge, the resolve that his attraction is just incompatible with reality. And that's the ultimate tragedy here, right, is that these are individuals who are born with this drive, this inclination, and it's completely incompatible with our world. It's completely reprehensible, and some of these individuals realize this and do not act on their impulses. So what Takagi has been working on is creating sex dolls that look like children, shipping them out around the world to individuals who claim to need them. Because what are the other options? There's cognitive behavioral therapy. There's chemical castration. But a 2007 meta-analysis from the Mayo Clinic found that no current method can actually, quote, alter the pedophile's basic sexual orientation toward children.
Right. So you end up with this argument, which is sort of like, if you have these child sex bots, is that a safer outlet for pedophiles? Or the sort of flip side to that is – is that going to aggravate their sense of frustration so that they act out on real human beings even more?
Right. And there's no evidence to show that his approach works. But it is difficult to gauge because I think, as I already mentioned, there's a lot of research, but a lot of the research is based on actual offenders, not people who managed to stave off impulses. But what research there is tends to imply that such a doll might have a reinforcing effect. Now, of course, there are several different categories for pedophiles, but University of Toronto forensic psychologist and sexologist Michael Seto speculates that there might be two broader distinctions among pedophiles. So for one group, a doll or robot might serve to keep them from seeking out child pornography or become abusers themselves. For others, though, it just might aggravate their impulses.
Yeah, so this is very problematic. And I think, too, like I'm imagining you, the listener, are probably struggling with one concept here that we're sort of – it's sort of like the unspoken thing in the room, right, which is mm-hmm. the idea that pedophilia is inherent. It's natural and it's part of this person's, you know, biology mm-hmm. and not something that's learned.
Yeah. And, you know, either way, though, the research shows that it is – extremely difficult or if not impossible to cure in the individual. So what do you do?
Yeah.
We're left without the technology or the medical expertise to, quote unquote, fix someone like this. Then does that mean that a robotic doll would have a place?
And I have to say, you know, like as sort of creepy as it is to read about, Takagi at least seems to be taking his impulses and doing something productive with them, right? At mm-hmm. least he's trying to like turn it around into something that has a benefit, I guess, to society, or at least reduces danger to society. But when you read about in this Atlantic article, his workshop, he's got this mountain workshop that's up in the woods, and all of his employees have to be former military, specifically because of the kind of chemicals that he's using mm-hmm. in order to create like more realistic skin. Mm-hmm. We should talk about this ceremony. So apparently, because they're Japanese, there's this special ceremony that's sort of along the lines of Shinto animism that's performed for the dolls specifically at a shrine when their owners don't want them anymore because they think of them as having – I don't know, soul isn't the right word, but that there is some kind of essence to them, that you mm-hmm. don't just take this thing and throw it in the trash.
Yeah, he says in the article, quote, "It's a common belief in Japan that dolls are mirrors. The dolls show their owner's true self." So again, a problematic scenario to look at, but one that that is core to both the arguments for and against sex robots.
Right. And then this leads us right back to Dr. Kate Devlin, who was, you know, the person who originally argued against the case against sex robots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this brings us into what I think is the most fascinating area that we're going to talk about here today, and that's the therapy angle. So she argues that sex bots would essentially be sex toys that benefit from machine learning and biofeedback. And she also points out that despite all of our sci-fi visions of humanoid sex robots, there's no reason these things would need to have a human form or a human face.
Right.
Again, as we've already said, a great many sex toys do not even look like parts of a human, much less a human being. She points out specifically that for females, there is I think it's called the rabbit.
Yeah.
Is a vibrator device that does not look like a part of the male or female anatomy. And then the fleshlight, which we already mentioned, there are apparently some models that do look like replicas of human anatomy, but others that don't, others that mm-hmm. have more fantastic or abstract appearances. So you could put these together and you could easily imagine a sexual robot that either does not look like a gendered human or even like maybe looks like a spider or something.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like it could sort of be anything.
Yeah, it could be like a Roomba.
Yeah, a Roomba might be something. I don't know why I was going this way, but like somebody might particularly want like a kind of whale, like a smallish whale.
Yeah, and I mean the thing is we can say, oh, that's repellent. Who would want to have, you know, sexual contact with an inhuman machine? But again, we are already doing it. The market research shows that individuals have been using non-human sexual machines for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not out of keeping with human behavior.
And so there's a lot of applications here that Devlin's saying, right? Like we could use this to treat a lot of different ailments that humans are suffering from.
That's right. So there's the treatment of sex offenders, which we've already touched on. Couples therapy, which I think is interesting. You made a point mm-hmm. earlier about so many of the current devices are made for a couple to use together.
Yeah.
Sometimes across vast distances.
Yep, yep.
Then this is a big one, the restoration of sexual confidence following trauma and or injury. Now, this is a topic we touched on some in our episode that we did where we interviewed Mary Roach about the surgical repair of genitalia, specifically soldiers who've suffered grievous wounds to that area of the anatomy.
That's an episode we should definitely put in the links on the landing page because it's related.
Yeah. And indeed, I believe Walter Reed Hospital came up in that episode as well.
Mm-hmm.
They have a sexual health and intimacy service that focuses on education and therapy. And there's a great Atlantic article about this from last year that focuses on the broader topic. But the author points out that the department in question features, quote, de facto sex classes that include sex toys aimed at stimulating different parts of the body. So the main aim here is individuals who have experienced genital or spinal cord injuries, they may have lost their ability to have an orgasm themselves, and they have to adapt to their new bodies and a new approach to physical intimacy with their spouse or with new relationships in their lives.
Now, in this case, we're talking specifically about veterans who have maybe lost a limb or something like that, but there's some cases where sex therapy like this is needed for other people as well.
Yeah, and indeed also memory impairing injuries and just basic trauma that stems from combat can disrupt an individual's sex life.
Sure.
So you need not even have a physical injury for this kind of therapy to be necessary. And so the question is, could a sex robot aid in this kind of work as well? Now, Delvin also hits on general sex therapy and says that, VR therapy is already a big deal. And she also mentions that VR therapy is already a thing and is only going to become more of a big deal in the future. And then there's this idea of the use of sex bots to potentially allow individuals to explore gender or sexual orientation or just sexuality as a whole. And in this, the role of the sex bot would very closely mimic the role of a sex surrogate. So this is a thing that already exists. And you can look this up. This is not prostitution. Surrogates are members of the International Professional Surrogates Association, and they only work with people who have been referred to them by psychotherapists. According to an interview in the 2003 Salon article, I Was a Middle-Aged Virgin, Los Angeles surrogate partner Dr. Avina Blanchard, she generally works with older virgins. They account for 50% of her practice. And these patients are men who've encountered limiting obstacles to experiencing sex. They didn't develop the interpersonal skills necessary, et cetera. And the exact reasons vary quite a bit, encompassing everything from extreme shyness to history of sexual abuse. They're often plagued by feelings of shame, and they need someone to help them break through it all.
All right. So I've got a personal story here that I can absolutely see applications for this. Okay. I had a nightmarish temp job in my early 20s.
Okay.
I don't think I've told you about this before. So I was temping in my early 20s. This was when I was living in Boston. And one of my assignments was to work for a week for a psychotherapist whose job it was to basically review and interview sex offenders and decide whether or not they should be released from prison into the general population, like whether or not their sentence was up.
Okay.
And they had been, quote unquote, reformed. And the job that was assigned to me was to – this was a while ago. I literally listened to cassette tapes that they would record of their sessions and transcribe everything. Mm. And so I did this for a week straight in the middle of a very cold winter in Boston. It was a long commute. It was in Quincy. And wow, like it was just like getting like this toxic sludge dumped into your head, you know? And I remember that last day, like knowing it was over, just standing there at the end of the day, waiting for the shuttle to pick me up, to take me to the train, just crying. Oh. And so I think about you know, not just virgins or maybe pedophiles or even veterans who need some help with, you know, these potentially debilitating sexual, issues that they're having. But all of this stuff it's very real in my head based on that 1 week experience.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like it definitely. I mean, it had an impact on your psyche to have to absorb all of that.
Ugh, yeah.
Yeah. But I can see the definite applications here as well. Now, surrogates, as we've been talking about, they're intimacy coaches and therapists, and they don't always have sex with clients. So there is much about imparting relationship skills, providing human compassion, and also just creating an open, honest line of communication, breaking through in the case of especially in the case of the virgins, breaking through the shame.
Yeah.
And I can see where this could definitely be an area for sex robots in the future, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So sexual abuse or any kind of sort of sexual dysfunction as we see it, especially in sort of psychoanalytical terms, right, seems to be something that sort of breeds a vicious cycle. You know, like the people who are hurt or tend to then go on to hurt others. Mm-hmm. So in this instance, like I'm seeing like the surrogates, you wouldn't want to be in that situation. But the sex robots, again, as long as they're not artificially conscious, they could serve a role to sort of put a halt to that vicious circle.
Yeah. And also just the idea, you think about this idea that there are people out there who have trouble developing relationships, that they don't have the social tools perhaps, or there's some sort of trauma holding them back from having the kind of interpersonal relationships that can lead to sexual contact with another individual. Like, should they just live out their lives without sexual contact? Do they have, like, on some level, do they have a right to have sex with a robotic device or machine or robotic humanoid if such a thing can be made available within an ethical framework that works?
Well, and let's go back to what we said earlier, which is that sexuality and sex are part of the human condition, mm-hmm. and our brains are absolutely affected by them. So why not have this technology that would allow those people to experience the human condition like the rest of us?
Yeah, and this all forces me to sort of try to imagine this future sex bot. Like, on one hand, imagine like a purely therapeutic one.
Yeah.
So you have to go to a therapist, a human therapist, to be, you know, prescribed your sex bot.
Uh-huh.
And they come to you. And it's not about just simply fulfilling some physical need or even an emotional need, but allowing a transformation, like getting you to a point to where you are comfortable with your own sexuality, comfortable with just human sexuality in general, that you are more capable of healthy human sexual relationships.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, like a purely hedonistic level, a mechanical Roomba or a spider that just when called, you know, crawls out of a box in your closet and does what needs to be done so you can sleep at night.
Right. That's very transmetropolitan. I'm imagining Spider Jerusalem has something like that in his closet. Yeah. Yeah. But not too far from, you know, other topics that we've talked about in the past, especially when you add in sort of like a bioengineering into the mix.
Yeah. All right. So there you have it. Sex bots. Again, something we just see time and time again in sci-fi that's really become part of our pop culture. But I don't think most of us take time to really break it down and think about the components, think about the pros and the cons. Certainly some of these I had thought about before, but other aspects, especially the whole therapeutic aspect, I'd never really given any consideration.
I think with the surge of Westworld last year that like this kind of thing has become maybe water cooler talk, but not to the extent of like the research that we did here, really looking at like the pros and cons and how it's beneficial or how the theory, the philosophical approach to it of how it could potentially sort of show the worst of humanity as well. That's the part I think that like Westworld's really honing in on.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like has Westworld, I can't really remember, and I don't think this is spoilers, but like was there an instance of somebody who visited the park who needed that kind of therapeutic help and going to one of the brothels?
I feel like it might have come up just in the margins, but I don't remember it being a major character involvement. Because ultimately, like how how dramatic is that, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You wanted to explore the cases of abuse or the cases of love, because those are the two big trends we see. Yeah. Either someone is abusive to a feminine sexual robot, or they fall in love with it. There's not a lot of and obviously there's a lot more space in the human condition for sexual conduct to take place.
Right, there's a broader spectrum, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So it seems like it should be present as well in our consideration of sex bots.
Maybe that's something season two will get into. I'm not too sure.
All right. Well, everyone listening to this episode is a human being. So I'm sure everyone has thoughts on the current technology, where we're headed with it, as well as all the various fantastic and maybe even more hard-boiled sci-fi visions of what sex bots might consist of.
Yeah, and we hope we didn't, you know, disturb you too much with getting into some graphic territory here. But this seemed like a topic that was worth really diving into and relevant to not only popular culture but modern technology.
All right. Now, as we close out here, we like to highlight various nonprofits and helpful organizations. Given some of the subject matter we've talked about here, we just wanted to mention RAINN. That's RAINN. They're the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. You can find them online, but you can also call them 24/7 on your phone at 1-800-656-HOPE or 1-800-656-4673.
And also, we're still celebrating Tripod Month here at How Stuff Works. If you're not familiar with what that is, podcasts around the world are sharing one another's feeds, and the way that they're doing that is on social media, letting everybody know what they're listening to using the hashtag Tripod, that's T-R-Y-Pod. And the one that I'd like to include here is I just got back from South by Southwest, and I saw a couple of live performances of the podcast Recode Decode, and they did some pretty cool stuff that I think if you're a fan of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, you might be interested in.
Yeah, and hey, you get on social media, everyone out there, and use the hashtag Tripod with a Y to just list some of your favorite podcasts. I'm not saying list us. You can if you want, but also list the other things that you listen to, the other shows that get you through the day.
We've had a couple people who've done some really nice hashtag tripods for us. Specifically, I've seen some really cool stuff on Instagram where they take pictures of how they listen to us.
Oh, yeah. Cool. That's a clever idea. All right. In the meantime, head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's where you'll find all the podcast episodes, the landing page for this episode. You will find links out to our various social media accounts, such as Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and who knows what else. Who knows what the future will bring.
Yeah, and if you just want to write us the old-fashioned way, we are at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.